PT Final Exam is an awesome resource for students preparing to take the National Physical Therapy Exam. Visit them online at ptfinalexam.com/pintcast. That's ptfinalexam.com/pintcast.
This is the PT Pintcast, a podcast that talks about physical therapy over beer. Bringing together clinicians, researchers, and forward-thinking PTs in a show that's anything but boring.
Let there be beer!
This is the PT Pintcast with your host, Jimmy McKay.
So the next episode of the PT Pintcast starts right now. Our guest tonight is known as a maverick, an advocate in the field of geriatric rehabilitation. She wrote the first textbook published in the field of geriatric rehab. She practices in her own clinic, conducts clinical research, and publishes monthly for Advance for Physical Therapists. Her popular lecture series has grown and evolved through the years. Each year, her courses are completely updated and restructured to reflect current trends in PT practice and the newest medical research. Her seminar emphasizes scientifically based assessments, treatment techniques, and protocols while being extremely relevant to the daily practice of rehabilitation of the older adult. As the founder and president of Premier Physical Therapy, she continues to work in her practice in a clinical capacity. Additionally, adjunct full professor at GW University, her dedication to the profession has motivated her to author over 21 textbooks on aging, as well as over 200 articles on age-related topics. Her pursuit of the latest clinical information led her to the position of editor for the journal Topics in Geriatric Rehabilitation. She combines her clinical and consultative experience in outpatient clinics, hospitals, home health agencies, and I lost my place. Oh. And long-term care facilities to present practical, immediately useful techniques for health professionals who work with aging adults. On the PT Pintcast, Dr. Carol Lewis. Carol, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. And thanks for the wine.
You bought the
wine. Oh, I bought the wine. But thanks for, I have never done a podcast at drinking wine, so
bring
this
it
is good.
Bring it a little closer. We'll do this. Perfect. Okay. First question is always the hardest on the show.
Okay.
All right. What are we drinking?
I am having an Albariño.
What is that?
It's a white wine from Spain. Very good.
Look at that, Albariño.
Yes.
As the bartender. That is very good. And what was this again? This is the triple peach from Hardywood, from Virginia. And this is very good. So we always cheers.
Cheers.
So let's cheers in front of your microphone so we can hear it. And tink. And we are at Range.
We're at Range.
At Friendship Heights in Washington, D.C.
Yes.
The Friendship Heights stop.
We're at the bar in Range.
Yeah,
Marble Bar. It's very cool.
And I love to do the interviews in person, so thank you very much for your time. Because it's one thing to do an interview if you can do it via Skype. It's another thing to invite a PT student out and then buy him a bunch of appetizers and drinks and do his podcast.
I want you to be nice to me.
Yeah. Besides drinks, I usually don't have apps. What do we have? Just give a brief overview of what we ate, because I ate some things tonight I have never eaten before.
Oh, dear. They're going to think I'm weird.
Because
okay.
You've been to this place. You're a regular here. This
yes.
is like your cheers. And you're like, I got, don't worry about it. How adventurous are you? And then you ordered
beef tartare, which is raw beef.
Never had that.
All chopped up with mustard and cheese and hamachi crudo, which is big chunks of raw fish.
Uh-huh. It's good. It was good.
But the weirdest is the next one. Bone marrow.
We had bone marrow.
We had bone marrow.
They just brought over a hunk of bone.
With scrambled eggs
on it. With scrambled eggs on top of it. And they handed us what looked like something out of the anatomy lab, the spoon, to kind of get the marrow out, which was good. And then we had tuna, raw tuna.
Yes, yes.
So we're going all raw.
Yeah, yeah. the bone marrow was cooked.
The bone marrow was good, though.
Okay.
Oh, yes, the bone marrow was cooked. That was very, very good. I never ventured there.
It's good for you, I think.
And I was trying to pretend that I'm just adventurous. This is cool. But in my head, I'm going, I've never eaten bone marrow.
Oh, my gosh, what is this stuff?
What am I doing? So thank you very much for coming on the show. You're hot off the McMillan lecture.
I am.
Congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
I've been a PT student for 3 years. As we're recording this, tomorrow is my last day as a PT student.
Oh,
ever.
Yay.
So it's a big deal.
Yay.
So I've been a PT student. I've been in PT for 3 years, and I already know how big the McMillan lecture is. I've seen two of them, and because I was in clinic, I was unable to come to yours, but I saw it online, and that's a big deal, so congratulations.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I loved it. It was great.
What's that like, speaking in front of a bunch of people in your field and being recognized like that? What goes through your head when you get asked?
Yeah, well, you're nominated, and so a bunch of people nominated me, and then I got a call from the president that said, hey, you're it. So I was very excited. It is the highest honor. So it's very exciting, and you have more than a year. I think you have 15 months to prepare. You know, it's sort of like the presidential election. It goes on too long. So 15 months, I mean, I rewrote it probably 200 times.
And they're making you resubmit and direct you in different ways?
No. It's all mine. It's all me. I don't do anything. They don't do anything until a month before. So I rewrote it 200 times on my own.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, here you are. Think about it. You have a chance to say whatever you want to say.
And here's your soapbox, biggest soapbox in the field.
Exactly, because it becomes an article and the video is online forever. Right. So this is it. You know, what are you going to say? I mean, you sit there and you look at the piece of paper and your pen and you think, what am I going to say? So you jot down things and finally it starts to coalesce and it becomes what you want to say. So that was great. And then the actual APTA was wonderful. They treated me like I was some royalty.
Because you are.
I had a handler. I had a handler.
What does a handler do?
Well, they make sure you get to the right place. Uh-huh. They're there for any problems you have. It was just so nice. You know, when you get there, everything is just all set up for you, and you know, you work on a teleprompter. Yeah. It was just wonderful. There were thousands in the audience.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was very fun. It was packed, and what was the greatest was there were a lot of students that came up to me and said how much they really liked it. You know, and the fact that I was able to make a difference for students. It was so wonderful for me. So
we hear that a lot on this show is that, we talked before the microphones started rolling. When I started this podcast, I didn't know who to talk to because I'm a student. I don't really know anybody besides my own professors. But they directed me to people, and no one said no. I kept asking people, hey, could you talk to me for like a half hour? And everybody said, yeah, sure. So. Students, myself, and the people who listen, we appreciate that because we just want to learn something. And the way you delivered the lecture was pretty digestible. It was formally informal. You said some really intelligent things, but it was really funny. I mean,
thank you.
That, Mary McMillan talking to you while you're on stage? Who came up with that? You?
That was me.
That's funny.
That was me. No. You know what? I had seen, this is many years ago, I had seen Barbra Streisand do a duet with Marlon Brando on the screen. And I thought to myself, if I ever have my day, I want to do a duet with somebody.
You
know, so I'm watching Lynn Snyder Mackler give hers last year, and I see the picture of Mary McMillan, and I think, I'm going to animate her lips. And we had a conversation.
That was great.
Which was very fun. Everybody, I mean, it was edgy because people could have thought it was disrespectful.
Right.
So I was a little nervous. I mean, and you know what? I think there's a lesson there. You know, if you're, think through what you're going to do, but don't be afraid to try some edgy things because that's a real, I mean, our profession has so many opportunities. You know, take the time to put two different things together and come up with something new and edgy, you know, and don't be afraid of it.
Two things that shouldn't be put together,
yeah.
Put them together, like, I don't know, a radio DJ and a PT degree.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's put them in a bar and hand them a couple of drinks.
Exactly. See, I love this idea. I think it's what our profession
needs.
And
we taught you how to subscribe to your very first podcast.
I know.
On
that
your
was
phone,
great.
And you subscribed to our podcast.
Don't let everybody know how technologically unadvanced I could be.
Podcasts are relatively new. They're catching on. My dad still has no idea what talking about, but I think they're a great way to listen to, and there's a ton of great PT podcasts out there.
I'm not going to listen to them all. That's the problem.
So was the reason you did 200 edits because, and I learned this in radio, especially we talked earlier about me interning for K-Rock, which is the home of Howard Stern. When Howard Stern was on terrestrial radio, he had so many rules. You can't say these are naughty words. Don't say this. And then when he went to XM, he had no rules. He had a blank slate. It was actually harder for him to make content because he had no hoops to jump through. You had worked your whole career. You could say anything you want, and now you're saying, but what do I say?
Exactly. What are the things? You think 45 minutes is long, but it's not. I mean, I kept cutting it and cutting it and cutting it, and I still felt I was right at the edge. I mean, yeah. Winston Churchill said it's more difficult to be brief, to be concise.
Yeah.
So that's the hard part.
It is.
Yeah. So a lot of different ideas that I wanted to get out there.
What were the reactions then? If you said you did something you thought might be edgy, did you get positive, negative?
Oh, my gosh.
I loved it. I listened to it a couple days ago, and I was like, yeah.
People were hysterical in the audience. I mean, being there was different than seeing it, but the people in the audience were just shocked. I was worried I totally had bombed because there was no reaction for the first 10, 20 seconds because I think they couldn't believe their eyes.
It was doing it, right.
Yes, and then people were hysterical. Nice. So that was pretty fun.
What's the story? What's the arc How did you ask me before the mic started rolling? How did you go from radio DJ to PT student? But how did you wind up in this field?
Ooh, well, like I said, in my McMillan, I wanted to be a social worker.
Right, and you got turned down.
I got turned down, and I was mad. I was so angry, and
you did all the right things. You did all the things you were supposed to do.
Volunteered for years, and they kept saying, "When you're 18, you're going to be a paid counselor at this camp." And I went, "Yay!" And so I show up, and they said, "No, you need a year of college." I was so upset.
They just kept raising the bar a little higher.
Yeah, and I was mad because I had done it for years since I was 14. So I kept driving by a camp where there were children playing on the lawn that had cerebral palsy, and I thought, you know what? Forget it. I am not working for free at this place another year. And I literally stopped the car, went over and said, "Do you have anything for me this summer?" And they said, "Yeah, you can volunteer with a physical therapist." I said, "Okay." I had no idea. I'd never even heard of physical therapy. And I started working with this woman who was incredible. What she did with these kids was... I was in awe, and she let me do things. You know, I got to hold their arms when she put them over the ball. You know, I was like, wow, it was so cool. I loved it, and I said, this is what I want to do. This is really making a difference in people's lives. I loved it from that second on. But I thought I was going to work with children, and I ended up doing rotations at this gigantic hospital, LACUSC Medical Center. It used to be 3,000 beds.
Wow.
And when you got out of school, your job was to rotate through six rotations: neuro, ortho, burns, orthopedics, medical, and pediatrics. And I wanted pediatrics. Everybody wanted pediatrics. So that was always the last one you got, which meant 6 months, they had you for 3 years. After about 2 years, I realized I loved working with the older patients, and nobody else did. And so they'd give them to me. Oh, here's, and this one's 87. Let's give it to Carol. And then I said, you know what? Let me see what there is out there. And there was nothing. Absolutely nothing in geriatrics, definitely nothing in our profession, nothing. I mean, geriatrics in the 70s was just starting to be a specialty in medicine. And so I tried to find a book, and the book I found was about a quarter of an inch thick called The Essentials of Geriatric Medicine. Literally, it was paperback. I still have it. A quarter of an inch thick. That's all they had. And there was no book in physical therapy. So I got a degree in gerontology at USC, and I... wrote the first book.
There was no book.
There was no book.
So you wrote one.
I wrote one.
That's pretty gutsy, right?
Yeah, it was a little gutsy.
Hey, there's no books. What are we going to do? I don't know. Let's write one.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, no, but...
I mean, if that's not trailblazing, I don't know what is.
Yeah, I guess I didn't think about it then, but I just felt that people needed something. There was no information pulled together. That's pretty much what I did. I pulled together whatever information I could find.
What's that like, though, literally writing the first book on it? Was it daunting, or did you not recognize how big of a deal it was then?
I didn't.
That's probably best.
I did. I think someone told me I'm a counterphobic. I just dive into my fears, you know,
all right.
Which is kind of a fun thing to do. You know,
I get rid of them.
Like public speaking. I think everybody hates public speaking. You know, I just do it. It's not a bad thing to don't think about the whole task. Maybe take a piece of it, you know, and do something with that.
That's what our neuro professor at Marymount, Julie Reese, told us.
I love Julie.
Take it apart.
Yeah.
If you can't do the whole thing, I don't know, start from the back end.
Right.
Can you do the first part?
Right, yeah.
That's the way to get the tough thing completed, right?
Yeah, no, I agree.
So you've written how many now in your intro?
20-something.
21?
22, I think.
22? Oh, man.
Because I'm having an ebook that's coming out. The first completely ebook. In other words, there will be no paper in your hand.
I learned when I was in second grade, which is many moons ago, when I was on an Apple IIe, which if you can find one of those, you're a rich person.
Yeah.
Computers will create a paperless world, and that hasn't happened yet. But maybe now. If you're releasing a book now on ebook, no paper version.
I want you to know my co-editors went crazy. Well, can't they just make something that's printed? And I said, no, but you don't understand the freedom that gives you.
Right.
Because what you can do is you can tap on things on it. If someone says you need to hold a stretch for 60 seconds, which is the amount of time for an older person,
right.
30 for somebody young, but 60 for somebody older, you can tap on that and look to see what studies support that. And you can see how strong the evidence is
for
those studies.
So it's not a giant PDF. yours is truly an e-book.
Oh, yeah.
It's an interactive
book. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, so when the authors who write the chapters are all doing introductions. So in other words, when you see the name Julie Reese, you tap on it and she'll say her name and what she's writing about.
Wow.
You see Carol Lewis, same thing. Tap on her.
That's cool.
And even the patient on the cover has an introduction. You just tap on his picture and he tells you, and he is a physical therapy devotee.
Who's this?
It's a patient.
I got you.
And he just talks about how much he loves physical therapy. So it's cool, you know, to get these sort of insights. It makes it more human. You know, it brings it home a little bit.
We were talking before the mic. We should have just hit record as soon as we sat down.
I know.
Because we talked about it a lot over the first drink we had. What's a way we start to spread what we can actually do as a field to all the people who actually need the things that we can do before we're passed up by, I don't know, PT robots? Because what you just mentioned was a patient talking about his experience in PT, and if there's a more valuable way to spread what we can do, I don't know what it is, but a patient actually saying what they got out of it. What else can we do? We talked about, man, we need to have like a TV show or a documentary or something.
No, we do. Well, I think that's something we need. I think on a smaller scale, what we need to do is, I don't think we're very good salespeople. I don't think we believe enough in what we can do. Okay, let me give you an example. I am not on a physical therapy faculty. I am on the medical faculty at GW, and I see the fellows in geriatrics. You know, not an intern, not a resident. These are people that have been out. They're actually physicians. They would come to my clinic every Wednesday afternoon and watch me work with patients. And then we changed it because they were just watching. So now my fellows work at the VA, at a retirement home, and at a skilled nursing facility. So we go to different clinics together, but this particular one happened at one of the assisted living facilities. And so we have clinic on one morning a week. This patient comes in and I'm in the room with them. This is the first time I did it at the clinic. And because they always watch me, I thought, let me watch them. And so this patient comes in and says, I have a shoulder problem. And, you know, they say, oh, how's that shoulder problem doing? She says, it's okay. And they said, are you going to physical therapy? She said, yeah. And then they said, well, is it helping? And she said, yes. And they said, and how long have you gone? She says, 6 weeks. And they said, well, how about if you want to continue? She says, I don't know. They go, yeah, go ahead, continue. And they let her go. And then she walks out the door. And I look at her and I say, just 1 minute. I said, can you have a seat in the waiting room? I pull my fellows back in. I said, oh, no. I said, what did you do? You just sent her back without knowing anything about what is going on. So I bring the lady back in. I said, I just want you to watch this. The lady comes in, and I didn't do anything magical. I said, raise your arm. She raises it up. She raises it to the side. She gets about 30 degrees in flexion and abduction. And
no,
I go,
no.
Oh, wait. I go, how long have you been going to PT? She says, 6 weeks. I go, 6 weeks. She said, yeah. I said, well, what do they do? She says, well, they put this thing on my shoulder that tingles and a hot pack. And I go, okay. I said, what exercises did they give you? And she says, exercises? Yes. And I said, you don't do any exercises? She says, no, should I? And I looked at her and I said, yes, you should. And so I showed her what she should do. I then let her go. And I talked to these guys. I said, no, because Medicare has given you the power to be in charge of these older people, if you don't know what is going on, you need to get a physical therapist that does. So now what happens, and I only get them for a year, we'll go into a room. If the problem is musculoskeletal or neurological, my fellows will step back. And I will do the examination and show them what to do. But that's what we need to. We need to be on every medical faculty to do some of these visits so that they, I mean, no one else can do it. They have no idea. None.
I don't know what the statistic was, but it was med students have less than, you know, 12 hours of experience in what PT can do or is able to do.
I'm shocked that they have that much. I am shocked because my fellows tell me they have nothing.
Well, then, is it really their fault?
Oh, it isn't.
So it's got to come from it's their education's fault.
Well, it's ours.
True.
You know, we defer to them without their really having any idea of what we do. For everybody in the listening area, go out there and say, hey, can I do a clinic with your medical students, with your fellow? I mean, it's better when they're not medical students because they're too overwhelmed. You know, get somebody who's a resident or a fellow when they're really out there practicing. I think their mind's a little more open. You know, let them see that, hey, you don't need to know everything. Come on, you know the medical complexity. You can do all these other things. You know, let us show you what we can do. You know, and the problem is, then we talked about who they were sending this person to. You know, you're sending this person to a physical therapist that's doing this and no exercise. You got to cut bait and get out of there.
It's a bad PT.
It's a bad
PT. And that's
PT.
Okay to identify that person as
right,
a bad PT.
Right, right.
Because I don't want to be associated with that.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, the second you said it, I felt bad. I heard this from another PT. I won't identify them because sometimes people don't like when I quote them on here. A patient asked a PT in my clinic, "What do you think about the surgery that was done to me?" And I thought the response was fantastic.
Okay.
I am not an expert in surgery.
Very good.
I am an expert in rehabilitation.
Yep.
So I wouldn't take my advice in surgery. I wouldn't always listen to your doctor's advice in rehabilitation.
I think they left it there at that. Yeah, right.
I think there's always an us and them attitude, or maybe not always, but sometimes.
No, no, that's why I like.
And there shouldn't be.
Well, right. I think we need to make a team.
Yeah.
But I also
think call it the healthcare team. It should be.
It should be a team, but I do think we have to get the message out to the public. So, other things I would suggest, short of having a television show, would be, I do a lot of community stuff. And, I've seen other therapists do it, and they do a great job. Go out there and give a talk on posture. I mean, how easy is that? And, boy, they have no idea.
Do we undervalue how valuable that is?
Oh, it is so valuable. Every time I go somewhere, the audience is in awe. I don't think it's me. I think any therapist with a knowledge base that they have could go to a senior center, could go to a community center, could go to a church group and say, let me give a talk on posture. You know, I belong to this club that is very cool. I should have you come there. The bar there is really cool.
I like bar.
And I did a whole talk on osteoporosis. I've done one on balance. I've done one on posture. And they just love it. They love getting practical information. I go to law firms, and they sit all the time. So I do a sit and be fit talk. I do a pos. I mean, they want the information. And they're sometimes shocked to think that physical therapists know this, which upsets me. But I tell them, yes, physical therapists do know this. You know, I think people get their jobs and find your unique skills. If it isn't talking to a group, don't do it. Maybe talk to your local paper and see if you can write a column. That kind of thing is wonderful. You know, do a radio talk show.
Maybe do one of these.
Yeah. So those are the kind of things I think that would make people more aware of us. I mean, we're graduating some incredibly talented therapists. And if you don't want to do 40 hours of patient care, come up with something to do in the other 20. Part of it being educating the public.
Yeah. I saw an example of what you had mentioned in going out to a group with one of our professors, Dr. Rita Wong. She brought local seniors in, and it was a fall prevention screening. And
watching
people's eyes light up with the, I want to say, simplest of information, simplest to a PT student, because it's hammered into us of what to look for, how to prevent falls, and the rest of the audience nodding in terms of they didn't know that until she had said it. And I got that experience because I was a graduate assistant, so I was there to videotape the lecture. So I was a fly on the wall.
Okay.
And hearing her explain things in a really simple form, because she knew her audience, explain it very simply, and them taking notes and just nodding along, saying, oh, that could prevent me falling. And I'm thinking, I was a second-year student at the time, thinking, oh, this is pretty valuable. Because if I can keep these 10 or 15 people from falling, that could be 10 or 15 different hip replacements we don't have to rehab.
Oh, yeah.
And that's...
Well, that's where you're cutting away people's jobs. No, I'm joking. Right. I'm joking. Sorry.
Right.
Go ahead.
But that's where I think in marketing or in communications, which is where I came from, how do you make the invisible visible? I can do something where you might not fall and have to get a hip replacement. That's making the invisible visible.
Right, right.
If you do these things that I've just instructed you to do, and Dr. Wong did it for free, you might not have to go through a surgery, which will take effort, time, heartache, money out of your life. I think that's one example of where PT is amazing and can do amazing things.
I agree. And it doesn't always have to be for free. I got through graduate school doing classes for back pain and knee pain and arthritis at $5 a person. And some of my classes had 40 people in it. So I was making big bucks in these classes.
Pay attention, PT students.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, I went to Leisure World. I said, I want to do some classes. People signed up like crazy. It was great. And they loved it. And again, you're spreading the word.
If something is valuable, And if information is valuable, it has value, you should be able to get something out of that.
Right,
if you
right.
have information, if you have knowledge, if you have education, that's valuable. We can convince people that it has value. And I think that sometimes that we talked about PT has a big issue, making sure people know. I bring this story up all the time on the podcast, is my dad. If I can't convince my dad what PT is,
oh dear,
man, am I any good at this? But I think we all have those stories about...
Family's the worst.
Family is the worst. That's why I said my little brother and my dad, they don't listen to me.
They're the worst.
Well, I told you, it's my diaper changing theory. If you've changed someone's diaper, they'll never think you can know more than them. My dad changed my diaper, so he's saying, well, what do you know? I was there when you couldn't wipe your own ass, so you've
lost your credibility. It happened when you were born.
So you do lectures all over.
I do.
Seminars that have been viewed all over the world. What's that like? That's got to be pretty cool to know that you're spreading the knowledge of PT to practitioners across the world. What are some of the courses that you really enjoy teaching?
The two courses I do now are geriatric orthopedics, which is a lab course, and I bring one lab assistant for every 13 participants. So you really learn modifications of techniques for older persons. And then I do a geriatric neuro. They're both 20 hours. I love those. And what I love about it is seeing people get new information or just a little take on how that is different for an older person. And, you know, in my lecture, my McMillan, I said clearly 50% of our caseload is geriatrics. So in any setting, except for pediatrics in schools right. or whatever, you're seeing older people.
Right.
So you need to see how that is different. And so I do love when that light bulb goes off and I see people go, oh, that was okay for somebody 20, but boy, I shouldn't be doing that for somebody who's 80 years old. And people are living longer. You know, I mean, it's not like...
You had that statistic.
People aren't dying at 60. People are living in their 90s, 100s, you know, so they need this body. No other branch of the professions in medicine can really help this body age well into 100. And we really need to do that. We need to take ownership of that and say, we're the ones that are out there that are going to help that. So I teach that in my ortho and my neuro. But I've gone to other countries and done some really fun things. You know,
like
Egypt,
yeah,
Turkey.
Yeah.
Those are great. Israel.
If you need someone to come and
carry something. Okay.
I'll carry your books or something.
Yeah,
whatever you need.
It's a little tough to get back to Turkey and Egypt these days. But yeah, no.
But you mentioned that. You mentioned that in your McMillan lecture that you had done a show of hands a couple times of how many of the PT programs have a specific course on geriatrics.
Right.
And you were disappointed in how many. And look, I'm in an outpatient orthopedic clinic right now. So it should be outpatient ortho. It's just all, you know, baseball players with, you know, or people with frozen shoulder.
Right, right.
I'm seeing, I think my youngest patient's 11. My oldest patient is in mid-80s.
Yep.
That's a range.
That is quite a range.
And if I'm treating the 11-year-old like the 80-year-old,
yeah,
not a good idea.
Not a good idea.
Right?
Yes, yes.
But, I mean, PT school is a snapshot of what we need to learn. And we learn a lot in clinic. But these things need to be taught. They need to be taught somewhere.
Yeah.
So it's good that there are seminars like the ones you give.
Well, thank you. Thank you. No, I love it. Those are my faves. I love going around the country. I love seeing the level of care all over the country. I love when people come up and share ideas, you know, and it's just so much fun.
Yeah.
It really is. It's great fun.
So working in your own clinic, what's that like?
Well, I sold my clinics. I know you put it in there.
That was in your bio.
Yeah, I know. That was not a new bio. I did sell my clinics.
So what was it like? When did you decide to go on? So you've sold it now.
I sold,
so
but I do cash.
Okay.
And I do see people in my clinics, but they're owned by somebody else.
But now we can ask the full arc question.
Okay.
My dad recently bought a boat.
Okay.
And I've heard the axiom, the two greatest days of owning a boat is the day you buy it, the day you sell it. Is
yes.
it the same thing with a PT clinic?
Yeah, no.
Okay, good. All right, good.
No.
How'd you decide to do that? Because that's a gutsy move.
But to buy it or sell it?
To start it.
Oh, no,
actually it
was pretty easy. I have a shining star or something. I moved to Washington and I worked, I'm going to say it, for a pops. It was six rheumatologists who are the most wonderful people I have ever met. And they hired me and said, we want a therapist who's going to clean up our physical therapy. We have seven physical therapists and we want to hire you as the director. And I said, okay. So the first day at work, I found out that six of the therapists didn't have a license.
No, that's not good.
No, that's not good. So I fired all six of them.
Okay, good.
I had to treat all their patients, uh-oh, which definitely wasn't good.
Not for your social life at that point.
Yeah, it was a bad 6 months. But they were over-treating. I mean, this was back when you could see people three times a week for full-body massages, and Blue Cross Blue Shield would pay you whatever you charged. It was horrible. But the doctors saw the writing on the wall and realized that wasn't going to last very long. So once I started seeing patients appropriately, they weren't making money.
Right.
And so they said to me, how would you like to have the physical therapy practice? And I said, what do you mean? They said, we're going to give it to you.
They handed you a leaky boat.
Well, but you know what?
If you plug it up, that
$9 a square foot in downtown D.C.
That ain't bad.
For no cost.
That ain't bad.
It was pretty great.
That ain't bad.
It was pretty great. So, yeah, that was wonderful. And the
But you made the boat float from there.
Yeah, well, it was floating. It just wasn't floating enough for six rheumatologists to make money.
I get that.
It was
definitely
floating enough for me, and it did great after that. And I had three offices, but it started to be, I just couldn't do everything. I had an online seminar company. I had a live seminar company. I had a journal. I had two kids during this time. So it got tough. It was hard to do.
An underachiever for most of your life, really?
Yeah. So I had to give up something.
When was that? When did you start that? When did you take that over from the rheumatologists?
79.
Okay.
No, I took it over in 80.
That's a long time ago.
It's a long time ago.
And when did you sell it? Pretty recently.
Pretty recently.
So you've seen a lot of different changes.
Oh.
You've seen the writing on the wall from the six therapists who had no license to pretty much now.
Yeah. And there's been a lot going on. But you know what? I have to say, I was sad to give it up, because there is nothing like owning your own practice. It's yours. You walk in and everybody, I mean, at least the culture we had a ball. We always had fun. You know, we always liked seeing each other. We did crazy things. It was great. It was great. We had mandatory water damage day one day a year.
What does that mean?
We acted like there was water damage and everybody took off and went to Annapolis.
Write that down. No, seriously. The clinics should write that down. Mandatory water damage day. We should all go to a water park.
Exactly. It was great fun. But you know what? One day, you know, it made everybody's spirits better. And we did crazy things. So we really had a good time.
And you made people better.
We did. It was great. I mean, I still practice. I still see patients, but it's less. And the hardest thing for me was managing people. I'm not a great administrator. That's my least favorite thing to do. And I think those listening should figure out, again, I've said it before, what are your gifts and talents? And mine was teaching and working with patients. But I hated administration. Even when you and I talked about a SWOT analysis, you know, when you said it to me, I was like, ugh, you know.
I gave that as my in-service.
Which I thought was pretty cool. You know, and you made it sound fun, but for me, it wasn't fun.
Right. Well, I think, you know, I was given a lesson early in my radio career. I was hired at a station, my second station I worked at, and I got the job. And I knew I wasn't the most qualified because I was, you know, I had like 3 or 4 years experience. And I remember asking well after I got the job, why'd you hire me? And he said, you're not anything like me. And I was like, well, what? Isn't that bad? Like, I figured I was trying to be like you, mimic you. He said, well, if I hired me, I'd have two of me and we'd miss a lot of things. But if I got you, you'll cover the things you're good at and I'll cover the things I'm good at and maybe we'll cover everything. So I guess that's a good lesson is, I mean, recently I started working with, I started the podcast with Tom Stormer, one of my classmates. Tom's a website guy.
Oh, good.
I know how to go to websites. That's it.
Oh,
I can't
okay.
make one. Okay. And
that's my level.
Right. That's it. I can go to a website.
Hey, but you know how to get on a podcast.
No, the funny thing was Tom had to show me how, I know how
good.
To talk in the microphone.
I don't feel so bad.
And then another student came along, Rachel German, and she's like, well, I'd like to work with you. I'm very organized. I said, great, because I am not organized at all. So let's bring you on board. But I guess that's a testament that's, you know, not PT specific, is find some people who are good at the things that you are bad or don't want to do. And let them go. Let them do those things. So did you solve that problem in terms of administration? Did you bring someone in
who
was good at that? The yin to your yang?
I did. But the key is, if it's your practice, the buck stops with you.
Buck stops here.
So I had to know it, and I dreaded it. And so if it's something you don't like, you know, you just got to I had to let it go because I really didn't like the administrative piece. You know, it took me 30 years to figure that out, but I actually have been happier. I just see patients, cash, you know, I do my teaching. I love it. So, but I think our profession has so many options that you can do that, which makes it great.
It's fun.
It is fun. It is fun.
We talk PT, drink beer, and record it. This is the PT Pinecast. Physical Therapy Day of Service is October 15th, 2016. Join fellow members of the PT profession around the world in a day of service to our communities. Here is what people who have already pledged have to say.
My name is Kelsey Miller, and I'm a third-year PT student at Mayo School of Health Sciences in Rochester, Minnesota. I decided to take part in PT Day of Service because of my passion for people and the global community. I think it says a lot about our profession to have a day designated to giving back to our community and to do so with our colleagues from around the world. My idea is for PT Day of Service on October 15th. As a local ambassador, I want to spread the word to other physical therapy professionals that this event exists. I really want to encourage others to be a part of this incredible PT Day of Service.
Pledge your support for the physical therapy profession online at ptdayofservice.com. PT Day of Service, October 15th.
PT Final Exam is an awesome resource for students preparing to take the National Physical Therapy Exam. 6-week online review courses with live webinars, personal attention from instructors through email, phone, or Skype, and practice tests. Choose from their Mastermind Study Group or the NPTE Home Study Bundle. Visit them online at ptfinalexam.com/pintcast. That's ptfinalexam.com/pintcast.
Working at his orbicularis oris until failure. Jimmy McKay on the PT Pinecast.
So question. During the McMillan lecture, you alluded to a dinner you went to with someone you considered a mentor, someone you looked up to.
Oh, Janet Trevell.
And you said, before the appetizers even came, she taught you, was it a treatment technique or evaluation?
It was an examination technique.
Before the before the apps came, she taught you an examination technique.
You want to hear it?
What was it?
Okay.
Yeah, I want to know it.
I can't wait to show you. Okay. It's your spotting eye. Do you know which eye is your spotting eye?
Like, which am I shooting at? My dominant eye?
Your dominant eye. Yes. You take and you make a little circle with your hand.
All right, so both hands are making a circle.
Yeah, small. Make smaller. A circle about like an inch wide.
Okay.
And then what I want you to do is see that beer handle?
I do see the tap handle over there.
So put it there with both eyes open. Get it in, make a little bigger than that. And with both eyes open, now close one eye and then close the other.
Oh, yeah.
Whichever eye keeps it in the middle is your dominant eye.
None of the tap panels are even in view with my right eye. With my left eye, they're all in view.
Yep.
So that's my...
dominant eye.
Look at that.
Yeah.
And you still use that.
Oh, because you know what would happen? I'd go to look at someone's SI, and, you know, you get them on the table, you get your fingers under the ASIS, and you go, oh, the right one's higher. And then you kind of look back again and you go, oh, the left one's, the right one. I mean, and it's because if you move your head and you're not closing the other eye, those landmarks change. Anytime you're looking for asymmetry, you have to close. For me, it's my right.
So you're looking SI, you're looking PSIS, and you're
right.
Saying, well, this looks higher, but if I'm closing my right eye, that's not the right, that's not.
You've got to always close your non-dominant eye. I mean, this was John Kennedy's physician. He would pay for her to come to the White House to work on his stuff. You know, he had horrible back pain. And she, you know, back then was the one who treated him. And she was brilliant. She was 93 at the time.
Wow.
We had a table of 10 of us. Literally, she took out. She asked the waiter for a menu and she poked a hole in it. She did it through a menu. She poked a hole in it and she passed it around and made each of us look at this item on the table. It was hysterical. But 93, totally entertaining. You know, we're all like 25 at the time. It was great. It was great. But I still use it today because, you know, if you don't, things move around.
We talked before we started recording about technology and how things are progressing. And I think this actually reiterates why physical therapy is an amazing profession, because you don't need an app for that. There might be an app for that, but you need your eyes and your hands
and
you know, a little bit of touch, a little bit of feel. And I think that's where PT as a profession has an advantage over any app that can come out, or program, or robot.
Right.
So where are we going in physical therapy? What do we have coming up? What's the future look like for PT? What do you think?
I'm going to quote a really, really old book that I'm sure you've never even heard of.
What is it?
Alvin Toffler's Future Shock.
I have not. But we're going to Google that. And
okay.
That on
but it was like in the 70s. Okay. I mean, it was not a new book.
So what's it about?
He talks about the trends that are going to happen in the future. And this is in the 70s. And I don't remember any of them except for this one, which I definitely believe more than anything is what will guide our profession. He says, what we are moving to is high tech, high touch. And I think what a great profession to be in. But we have to make sure we marry those two things. In other words, you can't just be touch. You have to be aware of all the latest literature. You have to be up on all the latest technology that we should be using. But if you put those two together, you have an incredibly powerful profession. I mean, medicine's great, but they don't touch their patients. Massage therapy's great, but they don't have the technology. You know, we have it all. We've got to develop it. We've got to own it. We've got to really try to make it the best that it can be. And I think we will be in the top if we do that.
We talk about research and how PT is very, very critical of itself, which I think is actually a good thing.
I totally agree.
Just be very, very critical of yourself. We talked earlier about an article that came out about scapular humeral rhythm. We might be wrong about that. Maybe we are. Maybe we're not. But we're going to keep questioning it until we know, because we don't want to get it right. Right? We want to be right. That's the difference.
Right.
Well, I want to make sure what I'm saying is the actual thing.
And that I think is good. I thought you were going a different direction. I thought, I do find when I read articles in the medical journals, because I'm really into how an article's written, because I've been an editor for 32 years now for a journal.
Humble brag.
Yeah, really, sorry.
No, but that's awesome. That's great.
We are incredibly critical and we're incredibly underwhelming about our results. And we do some pretty great things. And yet we say it like, oh, I saved thousands of dollars for the medical system. Are you kidding me?
If
internal medicine had found a study that showed that kind of cost savings, it'd be splashed across every newspaper, on every television station. And again, that's part of the high tech. You know, if we don't use that, we can't do our high touch.
Right.
You know, we have to put the two together, and we're just not doing it. Sorry, but you were going another way about how we're trying to find always be better. And I do think that is a good thing. That's a good thing.
Yeah, I want to make sure. I mean, and still, I mean, you know, I said my last day in clinic is tomorrow. I had a fantastic CI. I've had fantastic CIs all throughout my 3 years of PT school. I want to make sure I'm doing the right thing. I don't want to make sure I'm doing a thing.
Right.
You know, I can bill for
it. I have to warn you, the right thing changes.
I know. That's the point. And that's why I've heard this multiple times in this podcast is people say, I want to go back to the first 5 years I was a PT and apologize to all my patients.
Oh, yes.
But I've heard that multiple times,
yes.
Which means it must still be true. And I was thinking about that today because I had a patient who came in and I had no idea. I was doing what I was supposed to do, and she wasn't complying. It wasn't making her better. I was doing the right thing.
Right, right.
And I'm thinking in my head, in 5 years, we're going to have something else. And I'm angry I don't have it now.
Right,
because I want to help her.
Right, right.
Because she's laying there, and
right.
She's telling me her back hurts. And I'm pissed I can't make it better.
So she wasn't complying with the program?
No. I meant I was being facetious.
Oh, okay.
Like, she's not complying. I'm doing the right thing,
and
she's not feeling better.
Okay. She's not complying. Right.
Why aren't you with the program? Because I'm doing the thing I'm supposed to be doing, and you ain't feeling better. Like, so I'm thinking, I'm going to be thinking of you, her, from today in 5 years, going, damn, why didn't I have that?
Exactly.
But the good thing is, Foundation for Physical Therapy, they're out there.
They're doing research.
As a field, we gobble it up. There's a PTA at the clinic that I work at now. She reads the journals like they're a paparazzi mag. It comes out and she digests the whole damn thing.
I love that.
And she's questioning me about it. And I'm like, as I was studying for the boards, I was like, I don't need any more anxiety. So just slow it down a little bit about the thing. But it was great to see that she was just into what can we do today? Because this journal came out yesterday. We can apply it today.
I love it.
That's fantastic.
Oof.
We can.
What a great therapist.
But not for me, because right now I was then studying for the boards. I was like, I need to slow that down because I need to get the questions right on the boards. Then I can worry about what the research will come out. Because we can be surpassed. Anytime you say, no one can replace me. How can you replace me? I'm a toll taker. Someone has to take the money from the people driving through the toll booths. And now there's Easy Pass.
Yep. No, I agree.
So we wanted to do pediatrics early. And now we're doing geriatrics.
Uh-huh.
And you've done geriatrics. So I've seen that even in my 3 years of PT school, is students who are definitely you don't get more than 100%. 100% going to do X, and then you do Z.
Yes, which is great.
So what advice would you give to someone who's a student or about to be a student now? Because, you know, right now it's August. PT school is about to start again, another cycle. It's the circle of life.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's very Hakuna Matata.
Yeah.
What advice do you have to give?
You know what? I don't think you're going to change. If someone really thinks they're going to do it, you're not going to change them.
Okay.
I think experience will change them. You know, I would just say take in everything at school. Unless the schools have somebody on faculty who loves geriatrics.
And you said that.
Yeah, you're not going to find, if I say to that pediatric person, be open to geriatrics, but if there's nobody there to nurture them.
Sing the tune.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. So.
But you talked about we need it.
Oh,
mathematically,
yes,
why?
Yes,
what
yes.
did you call it? The tsunami?
Oh, the silver tsunami? Silver tsunami. You have no idea because, you know, the baby boomers were born after World War II, right? So there was this big period where you have all these people being born. But what nobody really thinks about is during World War II, babies weren't being born.
Okay.
So we have less older people in the system right now than you think. All of a sudden, it's going to go voom.
Boom.
Way up. I mean, so we're being lulled in because the baby boomers are in their late 60s, but they're healthy. So the people that are less healthy, there are not that many of them compared to these baby boomers coming in. It's going to be huge. And I think the way to really work with baby boomers is to keep them well. You know, to start now as physical therapists, because, you know, exercise is great. I'm not in any way, you know, giving exercise a bad rap, but specific exercises for specific things, you know, somebody who has a hip problem or a shoulder problem or a neck problem, you know, they should be exercising now. They should be doing thoracic Mobs. I mean, the difference I see when I teach my patients these self Mobs and these exercises, it's a great protocol. It's Bautmans, Bautmans protocol. Definitely get it. You can get it right online. It came out in 2010, and it's got all these things to do. Change my patient's life. They go from being these kind of rounded little people to standing straight. You know, I had one lady say to me, I can actually look at my computer without hurting my neck.
Yeah.
She's now looking straight. I mean, it dramatically changes their life, even at 70 or 80 years old, but even better if you get them when they're 50 or 60. You know, all these people that sit at computers all day with these rounded shoulders, they're a mess.
Yeah.
So there's a lot we can do. Baby boomers want to be well. They don't want to be sick. You know, they want to stay at a high level, and we're the ones that can show them that.
We're pretty perfectly positioned to do that.
Oh, we are. We are. But we got to take advantage of it. We got to have some creative people out there who are doing some good things.
Good. So every episode that we do is a pint.
A pint? You did
but
a pint?
Before we're done with a pint, we take shots.
Okay.
But you admit it. You hadn't listened to an episode of
I
my
hadn't.
Show yet. So hold on a second. We're not doing shots of vodka. A parting shot of wisdom.
Oh, good.
There we go. Now right. She seems relieved. She's like looking around the bartender. We're doing shots. Parting shot of wisdom. Tomorrow's my last day at clinic. Tomorrow is my last day as a PT student. You got me.
Okay.
It's PT Eve. I'm about to be a PT.
I know. Is that so exciting?
I passed the boards and everything.
Yay! So maybe I'll buy you a shot.
All right, there we go.
Okay.
That's what I'm talking about. What's something that you would leave a PT going forward into the field with? What's one little nugget?
Okay. I would say this is a great profession. You could do almost anything you want in it, but you have to be dedicated, and you have to see the value in it, and you have to share that value with everybody, your medical peers, your physical therapy peers, and the community. And I think if everybody listening would do that, we would be in such a great place.
You have to believe it. And if you believe it, that's great, but it's not enough.
Right.
If you don't share it,
right,
it dies with you.
It does.
I learned
that
from a really smart guy recently.
Who's that?
Carlos Berrio. So went on my first job interview before I graduated. It was 3 days ago. And he said he had some great information from a mentor of his. And he said, if this is no good, if it dies with him, if it doesn't get passed on, it's no good.
No good.
So this was your first recording of a podcast.
Yes.
So so thank you very much for your time and sharing this. And I hope this isn't the last time, because I think we touched on the surface really now. I think we got a lot we could still talk about if we turn these mics on again.
Okay. Sounds good.
So cheers again.
Cheers.
As we end.
Okay.
Thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you.
Like what you hear? Leave us a review on iTunes. It's not like our moms can keep giving us 5 stars every day. Or can they? The PT Pinecast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. Our lawyers made us read that.